Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, as always. Again, here we go. Today, we're very honored to have on Sarah Blum. Sarah sounds like she's a teenager, but she's actually a 75-year-old decorated nurse from Vietnam, and she's, of course, a Vietnam veteran. She's a nurse psychotherapist and author of the book Women Under Fire, Abuse in the Military. Sarah has a long CV and a long career of exposing this issue, and it's about sexual abuse, sexual harassment in the military. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Sarah Blum. Sarah Blum, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. Well, it's great to be here. I didn't know you were doing this, but I'm just really glad that you are. I remember years hearing you through the Bush administration time when you were on with Air America and Tom Hartman show, and I was just really right there with you.
Well, I'm glad you reached out to me, because what we're going to talk about today is a very important topic that really, in my opinion, is not talked about enough. And as you well know, oftentimes gets swept under the rug. And so first, before we get into the topic, tell me and my listeners about your background, and then what brings you to this subject.
Okay. I am a decorated nurse Vietnam veteran. In 1966, I was working as a nurse in intensive care, coronary care, down in Los Angeles, California, and I was hearing on the radio about this place called Vietnam that I'd never heard of in my life, didn't know anything about or where it was. And I remember that when I was 19 in nursing school, I told my classmates, if there's ever another war and I'm single, I'll go. And so all of a sudden, I'm hearing about this on the radio, and I think to myself, oh my gosh, I think we're at some kind of war. And so I signed up. I went to all the different recruiters, and then I signed up with the Army, became an operating room nurse, went to Letterman General Hospital, where I was in the operating room nursing course to train me for it, which, you know, really only partially trains you for what you're actually going to experience in a wartime setting. And actually, while I was there at Letterman, that was when I had my own experience of sexual assault, which was minor compared to all the rest of the stories I have. So I went to Vietnam and spent the year of 1967 there. It was probably the worst time anybody could be there, and I was in the worst area you could be, which is the 12th Evac Hospital at Cu Chi, right by the Iron Triangle and the Hobo Woods, where all the fighting was happening. So then I came back to the United States in 1968. Didn't even realize how messed up I was, but I became the head nurse of an orthopedic ward at Madigan General Hospital in Washington State, and I really loved that duty. That was really helpful to me, and I got to really be with a lot of the guys and start listening to their stories. But that's when I also noticed that something was really wrong. Their bodies, their wounds weren't healing the way they needed to. And so that's when I became interested in, like, helping them emotionally. And I talked to everybody I could talk to there about what was happening to these guys, and I talked to psychologists, social workers, psychiatrists, you name it, and nobody had anything. Nobody had a thing for them. And so I talked to the war officer who was the major who I'd served with in Vietnam. We knew each other really well. I told him what was going on. And I said, these guys need some help, emotional help. And he said, well, why don't you do it? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the start of my career as a nurse psychotherapist, although I didn't, you know, I didn't realize it at the time. So he actually vacated his office on the ward, gave it to me, and then he used the office in the clinic. I actually worked as a psychotherapist for many years, working with healing PTSD, and I'm really an expert at it because I know it from the inside out as well as a professional. And then in 1996, I went back to Vietnam to plant peace trees on the very first Peace Trees Vietnam trip. And I don't know if you've heard of Dane and Perry, but Dane and Perry was supposed to be with us on that trip, but he had a massive heart attack like days before we were supposed to leave. And at our last gathering, Dana, who's this really tall, big, tall guy, and I'm a short person, he looked me right in the eye and he said, Sarah, somebody needs to tell the woman's story. And I heard him, mm-hmm. and I agreed with that, but I was not there. That wasn't where I was. So mm-hmm. I just kind of filed it away. And then, believe it or not, 10 years later, 2006, I was talking to a woman, an educator, very intuitive woman, and she looked me in the eye and she said, you know, you're supposed to be writing about women in the military. And I said, you know, I've heard that before, but I've really never known, like, how to focus that. What do I do? And she said, well, the main thing is you need to start writing and start talking to women. So I did that. I started that. And then I wrote for about 3 years, and I was just really writing about women in the military. And then, and in amongst the stories, there were some of these stories were about women's horrendous sexual assault experiences. And then, let's see. So I wrote for about 3 years, and then I went to a writer's conference, and I learned all about the writing industry, and I decided to turn over what I had to an editor. And this was, you know, it was like Providence or something. I turned over what I had to this guy, and he looked it over, and he gave me a tremendous amount of feedback, very detailed, specific feedback. But the one thing he said that just really hit me right in the core is he said, look, you have all these stories about abuse in the military. Why don't you look at the culture of abuse toward women in the military? Well, I didn't know there was such a thing. Uh-huh. In the military, I didn't know there was such a thing. And so I went through a lot of emotion because I had all these wonderful connections with all these women vets who gave me their stories. And what I told them was, I'm writing a book about women in the military. And so they gave me their stories. And now he's saying, no, you need to research the culture of abuse toward women. You need to write about that. So that was like a totally different thing than what I was doing before. And so I was really, really emotionally devastated at the thought of betraying any of these women, because that's the last thing any of them needed, and it's not something I would have done. Mm-hmm. So, but I decided that I thought there was something to it, and I did. I started on that path, and then eventually had to talk to all the women and let them know about the change, what I was doing, and some of them dropped out. Some of them didn't want any part of it, you know, and some of them in the end wouldn't sign a release form. So, you know, some of the stories changed, and there were like a couple of stories that were like these intense anchor stories for me that kept me going throughout the whole process. And in the end, those anchor stories never got it into the book because they wouldn't sign a release. So was, you know, was a mixed bag emotionally. But that's basically how I got there to writing about that subject.
And the book that you're talking about is called...
It's Women Under Fire, Abuse in the Military. Uh-huh. And my website, if anyone wants to go there, is womenunderfire.net. And there's a lot of information on the website, a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. You can get the book there. And under media, if you wanted to learn anything about me or any of the things I've been doing over the last year and a half, it's all there.
And it is a fabulous website. Like I told you before, before we started the interview, it really, you know, it does have a ton of information on there. And you say, I want to talk a little bit about this. You say why, you tell about why the U.S. military is the best place for sexual predators. Do you think even better than, for example, the Catholic Church?
I think the military is a very target-rich environment for sexual predators. But now I think that that's also true on college campuses. Mm-hmm. Sad to say that, but it is. And as far as the church, I think that I'm not sure that I would say the same thing about the church, but I think that it's a great place for maybe for the kind of predators that are looking for probably young boys.
Well, but it's the same kind of deal, though. If something gets reported to a superior, oftentimes the person who was abused is targeted. And of course it's covered up and, like we said earlier, swept under the rug.
Yeah, that's the thing. The processes around it are the same, whether it's in the military and the churches. In fact, I think our churches and our colleges, like our military, are becoming far too skilled at covering up criminal behavior in the ranks. Mm-hmm. And yet all of these institutions are saying they stand for integrity, but that's not the truth. And so something that I'm planning to say on Saturday, V-Day, when we have our event, is that when our most revered institutions, like the churches, the colleges, and our military, respect rape and rape culture more than the people they purport to serve, all honor is lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Absolutely. So can you were talking about those anchor stories, you know, without like revealing details or people's names, can you give us like some examples of some really egregious behavior?
Well, I think some of the worst are the gang rapes, and there's a lot of gang rapes in the book. And in fact, I'll tell you about one of them that I can actually use a name because it was in the 2004 Denver Post report that was done by Miles Moffat and Amy Hurdy. So this story was in there, and so I used it also in my book. And so it's a decorated combat medic. Her name is Sharon Mixon, and she was ready to process out of Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, after her tour of duty there. It was very hot. They were standing in line, a lot of soldiers, and she was among them. And so some soldiers offered her a cold drink, and she accepted it. And they deliberately drugged her so that they could gang rape her. And this is very, very typical behavior. Drugging women so that they can gang rape them. And I have a number of stories like that. So in this case, she was gang raped. And when they were done, they threatened her and told her they would kill her. They would find her and kill her if she told anyone about it.
Mm-hmm. And we were hearing, too, that some female soldiers were actually dying of dehydration in Iraq because they wouldn't drink, because if they got up to use the latrine during the night, they were oftentimes sexually assaulted.
Yeah, that was 2003. So that's a really good story. Colonel Janice Karpinski was there.
Right.
And these three women literally died of dehydration in their cots. And she was inside when the doctor came in and reported these deaths to the deputy commander. And what the deputy commander said was, well, don't say anything to anybody because we don't want to draw attention to the problem. Hmm. And so what was happening was the women would have to walk past these very loud generators to to get to the latrines at night to, you know, to do what they needed to do to relieve themselves. And it was there by those loud generators that the rapes were happening, because then nobody would hear the screams.
Oh, jeez.
So the women took it upon themselves to not drink liquids after a certain time of night, but in that environment, with the kinds of things they were doing and with the heat there, they needed to keep hydrated. And so that's what happened, that they ended up dying in their cots of dehydration, because they took that risk rather than risk having to go to the latrine at night and be raped.
So you mentioned Janet Karpinski, and of course she was the highest ranked person that was held accountable for what happened at Abu Ghraib. And do you know, you must know Colonel Ann Wright.
Oh, yeah, I do. And very well.
Yeah, and I know her very well also. She's been on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox many times, and she is really an advocate for this issue that we're talking about. She said that that she was, I think, Karpinski was a general at the time, that she, you know, did act questionably during that. She didn't, like, always do the right thing. But she believes that she was set up and railroaded during that.
I totally believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, Colonel Ann Wright wrote the foreword for my book.
Oh, nice. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get a copy for sure. Yeah, she's a very good friend of mine. So,
I think some important things that I think your listeners need to know about is that this culture abuse has really been prevalent for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it undermines readiness morale, and it literally, literally destroys the health, the lives, and the careers of our valuable women soldiers. And these acts of sexual assault, rape, harassment, they've all escalated in recent years. We now have 71 happening per day, and every 20 minutes, one of our brave service members is being sexually assaulted.
Cry, geez.
And so rape in the military,
mm-hmm,
by doctors, soldiers, commanders, and gang rape, you know, all of it, it really needs to stop. And unfortunately, it has the silent support of a lot of military leadership. And so what they do is they protect, they promote, and they give these perpetrators permission to continue doing what they're doing by doing nothing about it. And the women are isolated, they're ostracized, they're humiliated, shamed. And then 62% of them, if they do report a sexual assault, they're retaliated against.
Mm-hmm.
95% of these crimes, and they are crimes,
right,
95% of them are from serial rapists and repeat offenders. So we have a serious problem in the military with these criminals, and they need to get them out of there.
And you point out that, I believe that, you know, people who listen to this show and people who try to keep themselves informed better than our corporate media, you know, they are becoming more aware of this issue, and it's getting more, you know, it's getting exposed more, but as you point out, it's actually increasing.
Yeah, it is increasing. In 2012, there was a 35% increase, and then in 2013, it went up to 60%, 60%. So there's a lot more of it. And what the military likes to claim is that more women are reporting it because of the changes that the military's made.
Uh-huh.
And while there may be some truth to that, that more are being reported, the other truth is that more is happening. It's happening more and more. Just like on our college campuses.
Right.
So one in three women in our world and our military are being raped and beaten. One in five women are being raped on our college campuses. You know, and it's just wrong. You know, and one of the questions that I have is, why does our military condone and support the continued rape culture that it has fostered? And why are college administrations following the military's lead and hiding behind image rather than substance, and basically allowing upright young women to be raped repeatedly with no accountability for the perpetrators?
You know, I'm with you, Sarah. It's like, this is 2015, and we see high-profile cases. There was just a high-profile case of a young girl who was drugged and sexually abused and raped by some students. I don't know if it was in Indiana or Ohio or something like that. And they're still, like, slut-shaming women for that. It's yeah. like if she wasn't there, if she wasn't dressed like that, then she wouldn't have been raped. So they're still blaming the victims.
Right. There's still a lot of that going on. And then remember that case a few years ago where those three college students, football players, raped a young 16-year-old girl? And so this is one of the key points that I like to make. There is this sense of entitlement that happens, and it's in the military. It's very rampant in the military now. I think it's also in our main culture and our college campuses. And it's an attitude of entitlement.
Right.
That the men believe that they're entitled to do whatever they want with whomever they want, whenever they want, without impunity, without any risk to being held accountable. And so those three college students in Steubenville, Ohio, they believed that they would be protected by their coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that attitude that we need to check, right? We need to change that. Why is it that these young men and the men in the military believe that they can rape women, gang rape women, and get away with it? They will not be held accountable in any way. That's the cultural piece that actually needs to be changed.
Well, because they consistently have gotten away with it. And I'm thinking that this, you know, culture of sexual abuse, sexual assault, and rape in the military, that's not something recruiters tell young women when they prey upon them, is it?
No, and you know, even, I don't know if you saw the Invisible War movie. It was really an excellent movie. Amy Ziering and Kirby Dick created that movie to highlight this issue of sexual assault in the military. And I know 80% of the women that are in that film. And so it just shows, when you see that movie, it really shows you what's happening and the effect that it's happening on women and how devastating it is to women to go through this and to have literally no support from anywhere. In fact, you know, one of the things that I wrote about in my book and that speaks to this is that in 1997, Major Elspeth Ritchie was the assistant chief of outpatient psychiatry at Walter Reed in Washington, D.C., and she testified, this is 97, the year of one of the scandals, and the scandal was Aberdeen Proving Down, where the trainers were raping the trainees.
Uh-huh.
And so she testified at a court-martial hearing, and she said that the hierarchical structure in the military was such that any woman reporting rape would find her superiors closing ranks and supporting one another rather than her. And that was like 17, 18 years ago. The situation today is worse than ever. And that same kind of dynamic is happening on our college campuses.
Well, Sarah, I can't believe that time is already up, almost up. And I just want to inform my listeners that, you know, they didn't hear things. They are listening to a Vietnam veteran, and you are 75 years old, and you sound like you're in your teen years right now. So my listeners aren't having some kind of auditory hallucination right now. But
Yeah, and so there's some things that really need it.
And I was going to ask you, what can we do to further expose this issue? What can we do to get real policy change? I mean, we're struggling to end the war, so there won't be any harm veterans, male or female. But before that happens, what can we do to help this issue and help the women who are in the military?
Well, if everybody would call or write or email their congressional representatives and their senators and let them know they know about this issue and that they insist that the Congress do its job, that the Senate and House Armed Services Committee do its job, and insist that the military begin to hold offenders accountable, punish criminal behavior, get rid of the criminal element that's already in the military, get them out. And then to pass the Military Justice Improvement Act, which is Senator Gillibrand's act, to take reporting out of the chain of command. Our military has been holding on to control for a really long time, and they simply cannot handle what they have right now with sexual assault. It needs to be taken out of their hands and out of the chain of command hands.
And they can buy your book too and get more information about this.
Yeah, read the book. The book is loaded with information. In fact, there's a lot of information in the book about what can be done in the military at the level, at the unit level, where women come in when they are assaulted and how they need to be handled, how they need to talk to, how they need to be supported, and all the different ways they could do that. The kind of simple changes that the military could make so that it's much more compassionate for women when they're in these horrifically traumatic situations. And I also wanted to tell you, Cindy, and your listeners, that even though this probably isn't going to be heard till after the fact, but on Saturday, which is V-Day, Valentine's Day, Vets Rising, which is a new organization, and Vets USA Empowerment Team are joining with 1 Billion Rising, and we're holding events in the nation's capital. And also in Olympia, Washington, the capital there. And we are drumming and dancing and speaking out to end violence against women in our military and in our world.
And I just want to tell people too that while they're calling their Congress people, sometimes we don't come with tons of money, so I don't know how well we get listened to. But also tell them just to end the wars. You know, we don't need war as a foreign policy strategy. And I think it just like the military, why would people be surprised that the military is cruel to its own members when it's cruel to innocent people in other countries?
Right. You know, I think the most important thing that we could do is really encourage our leaders to find peaceful ways to communicate with other countries and with combatants and with those that are acting out in very violent and vicious ways. I think, you know, nonviolent communication and Thich Nhat Hanh's, you know, promoting peace, I think is more a more correct way for us to move forward in our world. And if we could simply really sit with and be with people, whoever those people might be, and if we could listen with our hearts and souls, listen with our ears, listen with our hearts, and listen with our souls, whether it's a veteran or it's somebody in another culture, or if it's somebody that is very angry and hateful toward the United States, that if we could just listen, really deeply listen to them, we might find that we all are living a very similar human experience. And if we could open our hearts and have compassion, that it would go a really long way to making our world a much better place for all of us.
Well, Sarah, that's a great a way to close this interview, and I'm so glad you reached out to me to do this in this very important interview. I think we're going to concentrate more on issues like this as we're nearing the anniversary of shocking and awful back in 2003, and our Spring Rising event in Washington, D.C. around that time frame. But if you get information about the event on Valentine's Day, on V-Day, if you can pass it to me and we can pass it along to our supporters and our listeners and things like that, you know, they might not know about it beforehand, but we can get some information to them after the fact.
Okay,
if it's available.
Great.
So Sarah Blum, say your website one more time.
It's womenunderfire.net.
Okay, great. And that will also link that on the newsletter and the blog about this show. So Sarah Blum, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and good luck with your work and good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope, as always, that you were informed and inspired to take further action. And today, to take further action, you can go to Sarah's website and get more information, because, like she said, there's tons of information about military sexual trauma and sexual abuse, sexual harassment at her website. And I'd like to wish her the best in her work. Anyway, as always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer, Dee Dee Miller, my production assistant. I'd like to thank Sarah Blum for her very important work and for being a guest on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox this week. And as always, I'd like to thank you the most for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.